or it's something you should broadcast.
He was shot dead by Republican terrorists in a Belfast nightclub in 1997.
I actually thought he was going to be an actor. When he went on the stage, it was just like, wow.
A life that could have been, and the chance encounter that led to his murder.
They knew who they were after. It had been premeditated and he had obviously been set up.
Blood on the Dance Floor with me, Jordan Dunbar, starts on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds on Monday morning at 11.
Now on Radio 4, it's once again time for Susan Kalman to spread a bit of happiness.
My name is Susan Kalman, and I'm here to solve all the problems of the world. If I was to summarise my ambition, I'd say I was Batman. But better. I've always thought that the main flaw with Bruce Wayne and his alter ego was that he spent too long sitting in that dingy bat cave brooding about things. That's why when I'm Batman, I'll have an old-fashioned lair under an abandoned volcano because I'm a traditionalist, but I'll put in some Velux windows for light, have some scented candles, and make sure I have time every day to listen to my mindfulness app. Sadly, until I find an extinct volcano that's for sale in Scotland, I'll simply patrol the streets of Glasgow of an evening dressed in a rubber suit. In all seriousness, there are a lot of problems in the world right now, and it's making people feel rather upset. But I'm not a woman who stands idly on the sidelines. I'm taking responsibility and doing my part. I've started to embrace joy. And before you touch, yes, I always ask her beforehand if she's okay with me touching her. In this series, I'm going to tell you about all the things that make me happy in the hope that they might make you happy too. Or at the very least, you'll be so annoyed at me, you'll forget the fact that the planet is screaming towards disaster like a crowd of middle-aged women when there's a half-price sale at Hotter Shoes. But happiness is such a personal subject that for this series, I wanted to be close to my audience, so I could look them directly in the eye and make sure they were all on board the good ship Susan. And also to check there was no one canoodling at the back. There's no canoodling on my watch, I'll tell you that for nothing. I'm joined by 80 wonderful souls for this search. Hello, souls.
Hello.
Some of you are so sweet. Hello, absolutely. It's been difficult to think of just four things that make me happy for the purpose of this series. I could list many things that fill me with joy, like the smell of my cat's paws, or a comfortable pair of new pants, or changing back into my pyjamas at 3 p.m. But I had to make some decisions, and in this episode, I'm going to go on and on and on about one of the most incredible things on the planet, food and drink. And before any Radio 4 pedants send a complaint, I consider them one thing. Food and drink. You know, like Ant and Dec. Or Helen Mirren and me. Before we start on the road to giddy fun times, I should let you know something. I'm not alone on stage. The audience in the room can, of course, see what's happening. But sadly, those listening in their car or living room or trying desperately to make contact through the slightly baffling BBC Sounds app, don't have the ability to watch what's happening, which is a shame because this ball gown seems a tad overdressed now. Anyway, my wife joins me on stage tonight. Why, you ask? Well, according to some people who I'm married to, I'm never home and a workaholic. So Lee has taken to following me around the country in an effort to see me. Sadly, my previous efforts to placate her haven't worked. Did you know, absolutely true, you can buy a Susan Kalman mask on the internet? You can. I could sense that her indoors was annoyed at me being absent, so I bought a mask and fashioned a body out of old pillowcases and blankets, then stapled the mask where my head should be. In fairness, it did fool her for a few days until she realised that Pillow Susan was a far better listener than usual. Also, many people enjoyed her sarcastic interventions in the last series, so here she is. Please say hello, Lee.
Hello.
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 Have you brought any snacks for the show?
Just a medium cheese board.
And what cheeses do you have on your cheese board?
Emmental, a nice Stilton, and some runny brie.
Oh, sounds delicious. Where did you get the cheese from, Lee?
The hotel breakfast.
The hotel breakfast. The buffet that lasts all day long. I love food. The taste of it, the smell of it, looking at it, thinking about it, reading about it. Did you know that there are 5 basic tastes? Sweet, sour, bitter, salt, and my favourite, umami. I can't get enough umami. People say you are what you eat, and I'm sure you'll agree. When you see me, you think, umami. I think about food almost all the time and spend most of my day thinking about what I'm going to eat that evening. I even have an app that can take an ingredient or combination of ingredients that I might have lying around and make it into a meal, something that's affectionately called a store cupboard dinner. TV chefs do it all the time, but I particularly love watching Nigella Lawson whip one up because it's so utterly different to my life. She'll float into the kitchen wearing a satin nightgown and say something like, "It's midnight and I'm starving for something scrumptious." Luckily, I've got some squid, fresh chilies and truffles straight from Italy. Picture me shuffling into the kitchen wearing a free Dulux t-shirt I got from B&Q. Staring at some tinned mandarin oranges, mouldy bread and cat food. I also adore a midnight feast, Nigella. It's fair to say I loved food from an early age, something proven by a story often told in my house. When I was younger, we didn't stay in hotels. We went on camping trips or stayed in rented self-catering accommodation. Apart from one glorious summer of joy. My dad was speaking at a medical conference in Qatar, and we were allowed to go with him. I'd never stayed in a hotel before. I was only 6, and to my tiny mind, it was like a palace with gleaming marble surfaces and gold fixtures. Utter, complete luxury. My parents were careful with money, though, and we ate cheaply and sensibly for the first 2 days. Then I discovered something. I've never been able to sleep, and when at home, I'd often wander around the house in my pyjamas. I didn't think it was strange to do the same at the hotel. On the 3rd night of the 14 we were staying, I wandered downstairs and discovered something wonderful. There was a restaurant open 24 hours a day. I sat down quite the thing and ordered my favourite meal, spaghetti bolognese. I ate it and then went back to bed. I did this every night for the remainder of the holiday. And it was only when checking out and faced with a bill for 11 bowls of spaghetti bolognese and 11 banana splits that they realised what I'd done. I tell you that story because it set a trend for the rest of my life. It was an early indication that I would risk almost anything for a bowl of pasta. It also corresponds to the stereotypes about us Westerners that we would go all the way to Qatar to eat spaghetti bolognese. I remember going to Paris, determined to show off my French skills. I walked into a restaurant and said, "Bonjour." And the waiter immediately said, in the disparaging way a condescending French man can, "Let me guess, spaghetti bolognese." I mean, how rude. I did want it, obviously, but how rude.
I remember that. That was our first holiday and you were totally trying to show off to impress me.
Yeah. But surely everything I do impresses you.
To be fair, yesterday you ate a bit of biscuit you found in your bra.
I did. It was shortbread. Waste not, want not, for goodness sakes. Before we go any further, I must say that this show is about spreading happiness, so I want to find out what my audience thinks of my choices. So let's test the waters and find out more about you. I started with an easy one. What is your favourite food and why? Chris says, "Kedgeree, because I cook it rather well and eat it with pleasure." Simple. Alexis, "Shepherd's pie, comfort food, especially in the Scottish summer when it's 10 degrees. Lisa, Avocado and Vegemite. Yeah. That sounds quite disgusting.
I love it. You've got to lay the Vegemite on the consistency of road tar and then mash up the avocado with chili and put it on top. And it's got to be at least 2 inches thick.
That's
Don't
really...
knock it.
No. It, Vegemite, though, is that... what is that?
It is the better version of Marmite.
With you, I don't know what just happened. Is Vegemite not Marmite?
No. No.
I thought they were the same thing, but just called something different.
No.
What's the difference?
Vegemite is better.
Could you just take the microphone off Lisa to whoever it is over there who seems to be very upset about the Vegemite? So choose it. So are you a Marmite fan?
Oh, I love Marmite.
And can I ask, why don't you like Vegemite?
Marmite's like your hair, Susan. It's brown, it's glossy, it's gorgeous. Vegemite is like something you step on in the street and not be very happy with.
Now, I enjoy that. Flirting with me is not going to help you win the argument. I'll just, Lisa, I'll hand it back to you just for one right to reply regarding, is Vegemite like something you would step on in the street?
Marmite is really slimy.
And like
I'm just
my hair.
Leaving it there. Not like your hair.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. And I'll be honest with you, this is not the controversial point in the show I was expecting. So let's do a bit of a quiz, shall we? It's called What Are the Kalman Rules of Food? It's just a jingle I made up. Question one. When going to a restaurant, is it better to A, look up the menu in advance and choose what you want, B, look up the menu in advance and have a bit of a look, or C, just decide what you want when you get there?
Definitely A.
Definitely A, correct. It's crucial to make the decision about what to eat weeks in advance. Then you talk about what you're going to order constantly and get angry if anyone suggests changing their mind. Question two, how quickly should you order in a restaurant?
Within the first 2 minutes.
Again, well done. Anyone who takes longer than that to decide what to eat should immediately be banished and sent home to have a good think about their behaviour. Question three, in what circumstances is it appropriate to have the special?
When it sounds nice.
Incorrect, as you well know. You should never have the special because that's for people who have no regard for order. Supplemental question, Lee, for a bonus point. What should you do in a restaurant if they don't have the meal you've been planning on having?
Just walk out.
Correct. If they don't have... if they don't have what they advertise, they aren't worth the effort. It's important to state that not all food makes me happy. I have particular tastes and particular things that give me a rush of joy. For example, I am a child of the 70s and so believe that nothing is a proper meal without a good, heavy cream sauce. I can't bear all this, just drizzle a bit of olive oil over some raw veg stuff. No, give me a stroganoff and leave me to die. I love a vol-au-vent or a deviled egg, a hostess trolley, chicken in a white sauce. Sorry, what flavour is the white sauce, you ask? Why, it's white. That's a genuine... flavour of sauce. The reason why food tastes so good isn't just the flavours, it's the emotion and the comfort it provides. When I'm ill, all I want is boiled egg in a cup, mashed up with butter and salt, because it's what my mum would make me if I was sick. And if I'm ever feeling a bit under the weather, I make it and it takes me back to being safe on my sofa, loved and cared for. Food is magnificent because it can spark so many memories. I've got a really lovely homemade book that contains all of my gran's recipes for rock cakes and scones and sponge cakes. And it also has a brilliant recipe for Mars bar cakes, which I love. I'm going to tell you how to make them now. It's quite complicated, so if you're listening to the show, just pause it, get a piece of paper and a pen and come back, okay? Right, here we go. So here's how you make Mars bar cakes. You melt down 12 Mars bars in a pot. You add some golden syrup. And here's the Michelin star touch. You mix in some cornflakes. Now, I know I'm ready at any point to have my own cooking show. Food from the 70s that'll put you in a diabetic coma. But I still make those cakes, and every time I do, I'm transported back into my gran's little kitchen, where she let me stand on a stool so I could reach the counter and lick the bowl clean. To this day, I still lick the bowl clean whenever I make them, and to be honest, I still have to stand on a stool as well. That connection between what we eat and emotional happiness is well documented by science and in the arts. Proust tasted a madeleine dipped in tea and it sparked a journey of memories for him. I can only imagine how much better the book would have been if he tried it with a penguin biscuit. Food isn't just joyous because of the delicious taste, it's also a direct connection to the past. My favourite pudding is a dusky maiden. I had it in a restaurant for my birthday when I was maybe 8 years old. It comprises chocolate ice cream, chocolate sauce, whipped cream and nuts. I'm sure it's called many things to other people, but to me it's a dusky maiden. On my birthday every year, I ask for a dusky maiden, no matter how many strange looks I get. Because food is love, you see. In fact, you know how you know if I really like you? Like really like you as opposed to pretending to like you so I'm not rude. I'll cook for you. It's the greatest compliment I can give anyone. For a start, you get to come into my house, and that's something very few people get to do. Nothing wrong with my house. In fact, I would say it's a lovely house, but it's private. The glamorous, coquettish image I present to the public isn't the whole truth about me. I'm actually a lot more down to earth than you might think. Very few people have actually been to my house, and if you're invited in, it means you're smashing. Cooking for someone is the ultimate declaration of love. The preparation, choosing the menu, buying the ingredients, getting out the best china, checking the seasoning, worrying about the presentation, giving up on ordering pizza. It's an incredible experience. A person's love of food can be a very individual thing and a very precious treasure. And I asked the audience, I wanted to find out their strangest food loves. Oh my goodness, straight off the bat, Chris, cheese and marmalade sandwiches. How long have you liked cheese and marmalade?
Forever.
Oh, take the microphone off him, that was all I needed. Tamla, this one is very strange. Tamla, buttered Weetabix. Yeah. Oh no, some people are like, oh, that sounds quite good actually. Lisa, is this you again? What's your strange, weirdest food you love?
I only like the crust on pizza, and it was... I just throw the rest away. I just eat the crust around the outside.
I mean, she's setting herself up here, isn't she?
Obviously, if I'm with someone, I'll share it, but I'll just eat the crust, and I'll go around the table and I'll eat everyone's crust.
Is there a way, Lisa...
Yes.
...that you could get that taste without ordering the pizza? What I'm saying is, that seems to be a long way round to get the crusty edge of the pizza.
A good point, and well made. It was a particular delight when Pizza Express started producing that one with a hole in the middle. I just think the hole in the middle doesn't go far enough.
So you sit at home, ordering a pizza, and you chew around the outside, and then... Just
no, it's if I'm out, and I'm in a pizza situation. You can't always control life.
I mean, I know that, Lisa. Do you know, you should share a pizza, because you don't eat the crust.
That's true, I don't.
Between the two of you, you're like a normal person.
Lee, what's the kind of weirdest, strangest food you love?
One of my guilty pleasures in food is, you know, crab sticks? Well, you call them seafood sticks because I don't think they've been near crab ever in their lives.
So they're not called crab sticks anymore. They've got no crab in them.
Yeah, right. They're called seafood sticks.
They're the bright pink things.
Yeah,
you
yes, yeah. Uh-huh. I absolutely love them because in one mouthful, they are both sweet and fishy.
No. Someone in the audience is actually agreeing with you.
Yes.
Does anyone in the audience also like seafood sticks?
Yes.
There's quite a lot of them.
Yes.
Sweet and fishy.
Sweet and fishy.
Right.
And you were laughing at Lisa only eating a bit of a pizza. And you like sweet and fishy sticks.
Yeah.
My love for food is absolute and all-consuming. I love reading about food, watching programmes about food, talking about food. I read menus from restaurants that I haven't been to just so I can decide what I would have if I was given the chance. I've got a copy of a Mary Berry book that I peruse if I'm ever feeling down. Of course, the astute amongst you might suggest that I'm slightly obsessed with food. And I'm not saying that my relationship with food is entirely healthy. I do use it for emotional support. I'm happy so I have cake. I'm sad so I have cake. And I know whenever I talk about my love of food that some people snigger and look at my weight and me. Over the years, I've had to have quite a serious word with myself about my own calorie intake and how I've used food as an emotional crutch. But I'm getting there. You know, the older I get, the more I like who I am, and I can only imagine what a wonderful eccentric I'll eventually be. I want to be the kind of person who, in their mid-70s, takes their cat out in a pram. And when someone stops me and asks me if it's my grandchild, I'll say, yes, it's my grandchild. And they'll look in the pram and see a cat, and I'll look at them and I'll dare them to say that it's not a child. Of course, food itself can cause health issues. Recently, Lee and I went to get ourselves tested for food intolerances, which are, by the way, real things. I've had many conversations with people of, shall we say, a slightly older generation who refuse to believe that they exist.
When I was younger, we ate concrete and asbestos and we were fine. No one ever had allergy, just every now and again I'd try a tomato, my insides would set on fire and I'd have to spend 3 days in bed, but that's just normal.
There are genuinely foods that some people react badly to, and personally, I was aware that something was happening to me at times. I have to say, my constant battle with my digestive system is just one of the reasons I'm grateful to live in this glorious, repressed, polite society. This wonderful island where one can use a phrase that doesn't really say what the problem is, but everyone knows what the problem is. All I need to do is mutter, I have stomach problems, and I'll be greeted with a nod and an understanding grimace. Because we all know what stomach problems are, don't we? It's rampant diarrhea. That's I decided to see if what I was eating was the problem, so I booked in for one of these tests, and it was fascinating. Lee went in first, actually, and what are you intolerant to, Lee?
I can now officially say I'm intolerant to wheat.
Wheat! That's a fairly normal intolerance we can deal with. Me? Well, I have to be different, don't I? I have to be special. It turns out I am intolerant to cow's milk and cabbage. Cabbage! Of all the things, and I like cabbage, that's the problem, I love it. I can't have Brussels sprouts either. It's made the atmosphere in the house better, but I miss those little cabbage babies. Sometimes, if I know I don't need to leave the house, I have them anyway. And to hell with the consequences. But what about drink, the missed partner to my food obsession? Let me set this out in a simple way. I only like to drink 5 things. Coffee, tea, water, beer and champagne. Separately, not all together in one disgusting cocktail. Of all of them, I have no greater love in my life than a damn fine cup of coffee. I have to have a cup of coffee within 5 minutes of waking or I become distressed. I wake up every morning at 5:30 a.m. and I don't mind because I can have a cup of coffee. It's not an addiction in any way. I could give up at any time. But if you ask me to, I will lash out. But my other drinks have to be served in a particular way as well. I like my tea strong, very strong. I only like builder's tea. None of your fancy ones, please. I don't like to drink anything that sounds like a Faro and Ball paint. Wilderberry fire, anybody? Water must be served cold. See also beer and champagne. I won't drink fruit juice under any circumstances. Do you hear me? Under no circumstances. If I consume fruit juice, it gives me stomach problems, if you know what I mean. It can be difficult to have such a limited drink palate. We occasionally go to a fancy restaurant, and who do they cater for? Wine drinkers. We recently went to a very posh place and had a 10-course tasting menu. Of course, once you had the amuse-bouche of the pre-pudding pudding and the post-pudding pudding, it ended up being about 15 courses and took 4 hours to complete. Mrs. Happy Face there had the wine pairing, which meant 10 glasses of wine, while Muggins here had to pair her courses with water. But because I'm me, I didn't want to miss all the fun. There's nothing quite like making a waiter sniff the top of a bottle of Highland Spring. So you don't feel like you're being treated differently. Seriously, those of us who don't like drinking get the short end of the stick. And yes, I just said, I don't like drinking. Cue snorts of astonishment from people who think that all Scottish people spend their times drunk on special brew and buckfast. I've almost stopped drinking alcohol entirely these days, and I know it makes some people feel better to rely on stereotypes, but let me shatter them for you. People get drunk everywhere, not just in Scotland. And I'm Scottish, but I don't like whiskey, iron brew, or haggis. I know, I may as well punch Lulu in the tits while I'm at it. But back to the positive, you know how I know that I love food, because I can remember the best meals I have ever had more clearly than some perhaps more important information.
Do you know that? That's actually true. I've had the same phone number for 16 years.
Correct.
Do you know what that phone number is?
I know the end bit.
Can you tell me what you had for pudding in 2014 when we went to that fancy restaurant in London for your birthday?
It was amazing. There was a little chocolate tube filled with mousse and there was some tonka bean ice cream, right, and then there were little dots of coffee jelly, not too much, mind, and there was crumb, which was like a caramelised white chocolate, and it came on a square plate with a raised shelf for a thin biscuit made of dreams.
Right, what year were we married?
I mean, I want to say either 2012 or 2013.
Honestly, why am I with you?
Because I'm adorable! But it doesn't matter. You see, I remember exactly what I ate the day we were married, and surely that's good enough for you. I think the main reason that food and drink makes me happy, it's not just that it's delicious, but like Proust, it gives me a sense memory of some of the best moments of my life. Anytime I want to feel as cared for as I did with my granny, all I need is some Mars bars and a stool. And if I want to be dangerous, I'll think about having the special. I won't have it, but I'll think about having the special. Whether it's Vegemite or Marmite or fish and chips in a poke, or whether or not it's crisps and peanut butter sandwiches or strange seafood sticks or boiled egg in a cup. Food doesn't just feed you, it fills your brain with memories and emotions, with flavours, smells, textures and tastes, all in a thick white sauce. I love food because of the way it tastes, but more than that, I love the times I share it with people I love. Evenings spent with friends and family eating and drinking. I'll never be more excited than I am at the prospect of a good meal, or of a midnight spaghetti bolognese, or of a vol-au-vent. Maybe one day you can come round to dinner at mine. Not all of you, just Nigella. I think she'd like my dusky maiden. Susan Calman Makes Me Happy starred Susan Calman and Lee. It was written by Susan Calman and John Hunter, and the producer was Lindsay Fenner. It was a Something Else production for BBC Radio 4.
And next week, in the last episode of the series, Susan finds joy in the animal kingdom. Now, it's Thursday, which means the critics will be joining Front Row with their take on some of the latest releases. Tonight we'll have reviews of the Netflix show The Diplomat and the French film Pacifiction. Join Tom Sutcliffe at 7:15. First though, in The Archers, Tracy faces a ghost from the past after the news.
Shall we set about some revels?
What shall we do else?
Radio 4's celebration of a centenary of BBC radio drama continues.
If this were played up on a stage now, I could condemn it as an improbable fiction.
With a new production of the first full-length Shakespeare play broadcast on BBC Radio, Twelfth Night.
Oh, with mine honour, may I give him that which I have given to you.
Starring Genevieve Gaunt, Giles Torreira, and Toby Jones as Malvolio.
My masters, are you...